You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy.
Hi, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. You guys, I am always excited when we have guests, but I'm probably the most excited that I've ever been about the guests that we have today, just because these are people who I have known for a decade now. And the things that I'm so excited to share about, and just see the transformation from little Rogan to now young adult Rogan that you guys are going to get to meet here. It's just remarkable. And I can't wait for you guys to hear the journey that he's been on. And they gave me these really, really beautiful bios that are about their experience that I want to share with you guys what they said, because I tried to edit it down, but it was just so beautiful that I want to just share it as a starting place. So what Rogan shared: born in 2008, my early years were marked by intense challenges, including rageful episodes, sleep disturbances, and various sensory issues. These struggles were what shaped my formative years, making everyday experiences feel overwhelming at times. I started to despise myself, but through a journey I unknowingly traveled, I found resilience, healing, awareness, and strength. Even though I couldn't quite grasp what was happening, I did understand that it was for the better. My mom was my cornerstone to the change, and I only even understood it as a good thing because she was so adamant it was. Therefore, I saw it as good, and for that I'm thankful. I learned to navigate my sensitivities and manage my emotions, gradually reclaiming my sense of self. Today, I thrive in a life I understand, surrounded by good people and friends, and am now engaged in a variety of activities that bring me fulfillment. I balance a few jobs that allow me to connect with others. My journey has taught me the importance of perseverance and the power of community. I am proud of how far I've come from what I was and excited for the future that lies ahead. I mean, come on, guys, right? Like, I feel like that's the opening paragraph to Rogan's future memoir. So like, hold on to this, because now I see a publishing deal for you sometime in the future, Rogan.
Right?
Kim, no less though. Kim's probably got her own memoir. So here you go, guys. I grew up in a small Midwestern town in Iowa where my Norwegian heritage served me well in pinching pennies for the fun of pinching pennies and living an extremely pragmatic life. My family includes my husband, 4 children, ages nearly 18 down to 12, and always 2 pups, along with a few cats and other random farm animals. Our oldest was born in 2006. He was a bright, sweet, clever, clean child who made his mark on the world in a non-intrusive, tastefully delightful way. Rogan came along in 2008 and in typical fashion turned everything upside down. He was 5 weeks early and very scrawny, but oh so mighty. He was a sweet baby full of charm and charisma at his tender age. He captured the girls' hearts, but as he got older, he began to change. We went on to have 2 other healthy, happy babies, and it was evident that Rogan needed help as he continued to suffer from lack of sleep and horrific outbursts of anger. I became an army of one on a single-minded mission to help our child. We began apprehensively homeschooling in 2012 with my oldest as a kindergartner, and things at preschool escalated for Rogan. By 2014, we began homeschooling with classical conversations, where I was involved in leadership from the beginning and became incredibly active with other medical movements within Iowa, all while advocating and chasing Rogan's health in nothing short of a doggedly pragmatic way that helped serve him for the brightest future. So, I mean, come on, right? Like, there's no way I can edit those things. And I love just the flowery way that you talk about your very real, very challenging experiences. So biggest thank you for you guys being here and the warmest welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I love all of it. I feel like I'm like a passenger on this ride. Like you guys know the story and how it ends, and I'm getting to hear it all for the very first time. So I'm very excited about this.
Jody, they preceded you too.
Really?
Yeah, she's with me, Jody.
Oh, nice. Very cool. So Kim and Rogan, kind of just get us started. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of your journey into PANS.
Well, yeah, that's relatively new. I don't know. We were before PANS. Maybe that's not accurate. But I just had this awesome little kid, and he started struggling and he started changing, and he lost speech and he lost developments, and he just was so angry, and the anger escalated. And so I just was bound and determined to turn over every single rock that existed to get him help. But I was fearless. I was a new mom. I didn't know what was normal or not. And I mean, for any of us on this journey, we're all told that we're terrible parents, right? And if we just parented differently, our kids would whip right into shape. So navigating all of that, I just didn't know what was sane, what was normal. And I was connected eventually to a friend of mine, knew that we were on this journey. And so she connected me to another mom who had struggled with her daughter, who was with a psychiatrist. And getting set up with that psychiatrist was, we had been suffering for about 2 years. We'd done the diets, we'd done the protocols, we'd done the things that I knew, but it was all through, you know, searches at late at night, no sleep and lots of stress and hoping that something would work. But the stress or going to the psychiatrist, we got our labels, and our labels were autism and ADHD with severe rage and ODD, oppositional defiant disorder. And there were other labels. I kind of blanked out at some point, because when you have all those labels. So then we sat there as he told us if we didn't medicate him, he would be a meth addict out on the streets as a teenager, self-induced meth addict, and searching for healing and needing to have some normalcy in his life. And that would be normal. So, of course, bawling, I was like, yes, give me all the drugs. We want to help him. But nothing worked. So we kept flipping rocks over and we found Dr. Barr.
Well, as you mentioned, you guys never actually got a diagnosis of PAMS or PANDAS. And to be perfectly transparent, it didn't become clear to me that that's likely what was going on all along until much later. So, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because I think your story is so helpful to really help people understand that you can have lots of labels for things. And sometimes when you've got a whole lot of labels, it might actually end up being PANDAS. And that we'll just jump there now. It was during puberty that it became a lot more clear that there was PANDAS stuff going on. But let's backtrack. So that's just like our little preview that we'll get there in a little bit. Would you mind sharing a little bit more details about what you were experiencing? So rage and oppositional defiant disorder and autism were all labels that were given. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it was like in your home, just so people maybe could see what they relate to with you guys?
Absolutely. Well, the rages were the most significant and the most profound. And he definitely displayed more rages with us than he did out in public. But he wasn't shy to have those rages out in public. So leaving our house was kind of it was terrible. It was a nightmare because we didn't know what would happen. We had the cops called on us. We had all kinds of things take place. And as he aged and got older, it got worse. But at home when he was little, it was the loss of skills, the loss of language, and then things would come back. And so it just felt like we were on this roller coaster of not knowing what was up or what was down, or was I really paying attention? Did I really know my kid and know what was going on? We would have a few successes with strict diets, but then it wasn't obtainable to adhere to those because he was wild, if I will be perfectly honest, and just completely dogged in, focused in just one thing. And I guess maybe that's where the autism label came from, is that he would just get fixated on certain things and you could not pull him away from it. So that might be food. It might be, I don't know, changing out his clothing during the seasons. That was a nightmare and it didn't happen. Like the season would almost be over when he was ready to adopt wearing those clothing pieces and then entered into the new season. Schooling was, I mean, he was little enough, so we weren't really doing a lot of that. Relationships, he just really wasn't concerned about anyone else, anything else, wasn't really attached to people. There were a couple people he was bonded to, but just kind of aloof. He could not understand other kids and couldn't relate to other kids. I'm trying to think of all the things that we witnessed. But then as he got older and was in preschool, he would go through these rages and they would intensify, and he was older, so it was scarier. But at the preschool classroom, they would evacuate the kids and then call me to come and get him. while he was having a rage. So then we would get him in the car and trying to drive him home. I had an infant. My husband was at his job. So trying to drive him home, that could be, we had a couple of dicey rides with that. So then we would, he'd have to get him out of the car and we'd have to kind of shock him. We'd have to kind of do something big to kind of get him to like come back to. And so that would elicit, you know, just kicking him out of the car and him having these rages, that would elicit people calling the cops. So all of those kinds of things. I don't know if there were other things. He was picky about food and other things like that.
So things that it makes sense that you got all the labels that you got, but that when you put all of those things together, like people don't always realize that there's a lot of kids who get misdiagnosed with autism who actually have PANS because there is an overlap. And if I recall correctly, the reason it didn't jump out to me is there was rigidity, but it wasn't like a clear OCD. And there were no tics until much later on. And the tics were so we didn't have any of those things. And there wasn't like a clear history of lots of infections either, right? Mm-hmm. So like we had fluctuating symptoms, which should have been, like if I had been better educated about PANS and PANDAS at the time when we first met, I'd heard about it and I'd seen like a little bit about it, but I wasn't as well educated about it as I am now. And I was more educated than a lot of doctors were, period. So I missed any signs because there were like some of the things that we would normally look for in PANS just weren't there, right? Like we didn't know that there was like the fluctuations that were happening were likely immune mediated because there weren't like triggers that we could see. I'm curious, Rogan, do you remember any of this happening?
I do remember a couple of rages, like such as in my previous room, in my older room, my mom, they had bolted the door. Yeah. So they locked the door because I was in a rage. And I remember ripping out one of the drawers from my I want to say cupboard. I'm forgetting the word. And I slammed it up against the door. And I remember doing that and I was angry, but I was also just like scared and confused. And I didn't know what to do. So it was all just impulse. It was just,
almost like you have control of your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then at school, it was also just confusion. And I was acting out in just anger, obviously. Because I didn't know how to cope with the emotions I was feeling.
It's surprising to me that you remember as much as you do. Honestly, so many kids, when they're going through it, it's almost like they're out of their body in that moment. And then to be so young, that's probably among your first memories of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any experience with homeopathy before coming to Resilience?
You know, traveling down this, just thinking about all of this and our whole journey, I am racking my brain and I cannot remember. I was researching like a mad person and anyone would mention something and I would try it. I may have vaguely been familiar, but if I was, I didn't understand it. I just took something. It wasn't related to Rogan. But I don't know. I don't know if homeopathy, the first time I heard it was through Dr. Barr or if I had tried a few remedies. And I was in, you know, all these natural crunchy groups and trying all kinds of crazy different things. So it's possible that I had a few remedies, but I can't remember.
I don't think you'd ever tried anything, honestly. I don't think you had, but I didn't remember if you'd had anything like your personal, like, you know, sometimes people use something like when they're pregnant or something like that.
Yeah. I was hoping that you would remember, Dr. Barr, because I couldn't.
That's what I always say for my daughter's healing journey. I'm like, I don't remember. Dr. Barr remembers everything for me.
And she does. I don't know how, but she does.
I know. It's amazing. So share with us what you can remember from your healing journey.
I remember, first of all, I just remember my husband, you know, we called Rogan the little Elvis Presley of toddlers because he was on buckets and buckets of drugs. He was on drugs to wake up. He was on drugs to go to bed. He was on drugs just to focus and maintain. And none of them worked. Maybe we had a few positive results with sleeping, but they were minimal. And this doctor was trying every single ADHD med and other drugs. And he would put them on. And I remember after we had been with him a year and a half, I remember at one point he said, well, this is our last drug. We've tried every single possibility out there. We've tried every single dosage from minimal on up to adult dosages. And this is it. It's an experimental drug. It's $800. I think I have a coupon. I'll see if I can get that coupon for you. And I think that this, I had to go, like, I had to drive an hour away. I think this pharmacy will have it. So try this. And I think this will work. I think this will be the one. And I remember driving thinking, what am I doing? So that night, and the rages happened the whole time throughout all of this. And those were the worst. I mean, everything else we just kind of dealt with and it was no big deal compared to the rages. So, I mean, we had his room stripped. We had a lock on the door. We had everything so that he could function and we'd have to just hold him for hours. They would happen and last for 4 hours at a time. So my husband that night just said, no, we're done. He's not going to have another pill in his body and we are done. This is over. It is not working. This is stupid. So I just went to the computer and up popped Dr. Barr's face and her contact information. And I called her the next day and I just had so much hope talking to her because she got it. And I didn't feel like a crazy psycho person. I think it was the next day we did an intake for Rogan and it was a 3-hour intake, which was me because he was so young. It was me doing the intake. And I drove myself to Whole Foods and gave him a remedy and instantaneously, I had a different kid in front of me. He responded immediately. And I thought, is that real? Is that truly happening? Or is this just all in my head?
I just remember it being not a chore or anything. Just like when I was way littler, like 3, 4, 5, I just remembered it. I was just doing it because of my mom. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it as anything special or anything. I just was doing it because my mom told me, and I didn't even understand what was really going on until I got older.
I remember that first dose that we gave him, completely different kid, but I think there's a lot of gaslighting when it comes to this whole journey and this whole process. So then I start playing mind games with myself. Well, maybe it would have happened normally. Maybe this homeopathy really didn't do anything. Well, then he would start to backslide. He never had a rage again, but we were in such constant communication and you were such an impeccable teacher of giving me what to look for. And it took a while for me to catch on. I'm a slow learner, but just knowing what to look for and how to answer questions that you would ask. And I mean, I just remember the intake form, like when he has a rage, does his whole face get red or just his cheeks or just red from his chin halfway up his face? And it just blew my mind. Like, what do his pupils do? Do they die? All these questions. So slowly over time, I was able to pay closer attention to him and realize, you know, if the most minuscule thing would change, I could be on the phone with you and we could have a different remedy or a different dosage, whatever he needed. And that kept him going. And it wasn't until my husband could see, like, oh, wow. He would be in the middle of something like, I mean, he had anger and still has anger, but, you know, have a really big emotion or a big, because the tics did come later. And maybe the tics also was pretty remarkable to see him struggling and him going through things and then have a remedy and it would cease. So,
yeah. I just would acknowledge what you said about gaslighting because maybe Joe, if you want to say something about it too, but like, it's remarkable to me, Kim, and just like a testament to your strength, because one, you went through this without getting a clear diagnosis. And I think that's important for people to understand that you don't necessarily have to have the diagnosis for homeopathy to still be helpful. You can still find solutions, even if you can't get a specific diagnosis, because the way homeopathy works, it can help stimulate healing, regardless of how you're suffering. And two, I think, so it's remarkable to me that you managed to get through all of this and like the intensity of what you guys were going through, you too, Rogan, without a community that like exists now, because you didn't have a label for a community to join and you didn't have the supports.
I had a really good friend, a very good friend that was there and helped me because she saw it. So otherwise I don't know, without her, I don't know if I would have been able to. Yeah.
Because it's crazy making. Like I've heard a mom say before, Pans is the ultimate gaslighter. But I love that you said this about sort of about the homeopathic journey, because it's so true. And I don't think we've ever talked about this before, is you question reality because it's almost so unbelievable what you see. And I feel like it's even more true with my husband, because he's like he went back and forth with it even more, because he's like, wait, no, it was a good day. It was a good 3 days. And so it's such a mind trip going on this journey. And I think it takes us getting further and further into it to where we're like, oh, okay, that was 3 good days. And then there was 6 good days. And then there was, oh my goodness, there was 2 good weeks. And so you have to like, it's like this faith and trust in homeopathy that grows, that gets rid of the gaslighter as we go along.
So true. So true.
So we mentioned before ticks, you just brought the ticks up again. So let's go ahead and talk about that. So, you know, hindsight 2020 and, you know, all the things I've learned and expertise that I've gained and everything. And I'm just like sitting here thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you should have seen this. Like if I were to have met Rogan today at 5, instead of 10 years ago at 5, I would have seen it clear as day, what was going on. And that this was Pans, because he, all of the symptoms, all of the ways that like the regression, the cognitive regression, mm-hmm. the fluctuations mm-hmm. that like, it wasn't like a constant persistent, regressions, or even the rages, like they were prominent and they were there a lot, but it like fluctuated. It was up and down, all of the stuff. It was fluctuating. And the fact that he didn't respond well to the psychiatric medications, that nothing worked the way it was supposed to, and had some mm-hmm. adverse reactions to things. Those are all pretty strong signs that it's a Pans, like that's going on underneath the surface. But it became really clear. We finally said it when the tics and more clear OCD instead of just rigidity showed up. Mm-hmm. So Rogan, do you remember when that first came up in your life?
It was, I would be like laying bed, sorry, I would be laying in bed mm-hmm. and I would suddenly just, my arm would just start like flying around. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I could control it. I could make it do that, but it was such like an addictive impulse. It was so random and bizarre. And I had a lot of quirky little things. Like I would repeat words after I said them, like in a ghost. I wouldn't say it, but I would like mouth it. So I would say, I want to go to the park, and then just under my breath for no reason. Mm-hmm. I also had, I just
you suck on your shirt a lot.
I sucked on my shirt. It was just a lot of weird stuff, and I remember kind of recognizing it and trying to fix it, but I it was the remedies that really did help with that.
Yeah. Was it startling to see these new things show up?
They kind of happened over time. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a time where I was like, what was that? But yeah. I can definitely see how they did kind of just appear. I didn't have them in my early stage and I don't have them now.
What about you, Kim? Did it feel like they were sudden to you, or did they feel like they were gradual to you?
They felt gradual to me. They came on suddenly, but I didn't notice right away, because mm-hmm. I didn't notice things like he would take his shirt and he would chew on his shirt. Mm-hmm. And I didn't consider that as a tick until mm-hmm. you pointed it out. When sure. we would do a thorough questionnaire, I'd be like, oh yeah, that is new. mm-hmm. I can't remember all of the ticks he had throughout the time. I'm trying to think of them, but it wasn't funny by any means, but it wasn't earth shattering like his rages were. Right. So I think that's why, I mean, I eventually got with the program and was able to pick up and pay attention to them, but yeah, I don't know that I took them as seriously, and we could have right. probably gone through a little faster if I would have been a little bit more on it.
Right. And we hadn't figured out that this was likely mm-hmm. Pans that he was dealing with until this stuff showed up and we were able to like label it and identify it and see, okay, let's put all of the things together. This is clearly Pans. And so you had the reverse of what I see with a lot of parents. So Pans parents are so attuned to tics that like any movement feels like it's a tick. And you were more like a typical parent that doesn't have a PANS kid that was just like, oh, he's just being weird. He's just going through a phase or whatever. And like, it didn't attract your attention. And we were at this point that he was doing so well for so long, we weren't having like regular follow-ups. So I didn't pick up on it until you're like, oh yeah, this has been going on for several months. And I'm like, wait, what? We could have talked about this. I think you were around, was it like 11 or 12 when these came up?
I would say what I fixated on and what I was just in tune to greatly was I remember joining this homeschool community and he was still little and it was at the, you know, his rages were still, he wasn't raging actively, but it could go either way. He could just have a meltdown, right? It had changed from rages to meltdowns. And I just remember panicked, like he had to be in a classroom. Another person was leading the class because frankly, I needed a break from him. But what could happen and how serious it could be. And people thought I was nuts, absolutely nuts. And I was like, don't, if anything happens, and I fixated on those things. Like if anything, you see anything weird or he has an issue with anyone else. Like for instance, he loves his story. He doesn't, but he wanted to be a line leader and he was in kindergarten. He wanted to be a line leader. And there was a sweet, sweet woman who was teaching this class and it was her son who was currently the line leader. And he just hauled off and punched this kid in the face because that was normal in his world. And she hadn't seen it. So she of course took his to Rogan's side and was like, oh, it's okay. I'm sure you didn't hit him, thinking that her son just had made this up. I was like, oh, now we've created a monster and he's going to punch everyone in the face every week. And I just remember, like, who is he going to respond to? If he did have a meltdown, would he respond to me? Would he respond to my friend? Who would he respond to? And how can we get him back to baseline? Yeah. That was my sole fixation and focus. And so ticks were such a, not a big deal to me.
Yeah. Nobody was in danger around a tick.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So then as he got older, and he had gotten to a stabilized level and we weren't talking as frequently. I remember he had the accident. Was it before the accident, the four-wheeler accident?
I think so.
Okay, I remember when he had the four-wheeler accident and then he swelled up and he had strep and I was so proud of myself because I had treated it, which is a very dangerous thing to do and no one should do this, but I treated his strep infection naturally with all the things I'd had at home because I had been such a student of natural medicines. And I remember talking with you afterwards because ticks came about and other things had changed and we were back into some dangerous territory. And I remember you, first of all, questioning what I had done, rightfully so. And then just like, that's when we started talking about PANS. And that's when you were wanting me to go get a strep test or a test. All kinds of tests. We did blood tests and swabs and everything else, which nothing came back conclusive. But that's when it started to change for us. And that's also when the ticks were around, is what I remember. I don't know if that's accurate.
And that was also, so we had, I'd forgotten about the four-wheeler accident. So we had both an injury, a big injury, and puberty happening around the same time too.
Yep.
And these are really important things. This is why I wanted you guys to come and talk, because it's like you had all the things over a prolonged period of time, right? Like you had the misdiagnoses early on that like in retrospect really clear, but in the moment was not super clear. So head injuries and big injuries can cause regressions. It can actually also cause more inflammation and make symptoms appear more prominent. Puberty is also a time when things sort of change. And that happened with you guys, that like you had a flare of symptoms, but it looked different. And so I wanted you guys to share a little bit, if you can, about how quickly or easily the new symptoms resolved once you realized that they were actually symptoms that needed to be worked with.
Once he started regressing, we were in communication with you and it felt like we were in danger territory and it felt scary. But it was a blip in the road because he could respond to homeopathy. Then I knew to pay attention and knew how to pay attention so much better. And he sailed through. I mean, we were in constant communication and we were still changing remedies and dosages. And then it kind of mirrored what the beginning was like on a super small scale, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it, I, as I recall, and I could pull up the, your chart, but I won't do that to anybody right now. But like, as I recall, it was like 6 months or less that we were in regular communication, and things basically smoothed over, and we are back to like a couple times a year we talk to each other, and that's even, and it's not even necessary right now. It was a blip in the road. It felt hard in the moment and scary probably to both of you. And Rogan, you were probably a lot more aware of what was going on.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So was it more scary for you, or was it just like a completely different experience?
I think, well, there's two good things about it. It was when I had powerful emotions, like when it first started happening again, I was like, ah, man, I just messed up. And I more thought of it as like, I can handle it myself. I don't need these things. I don't. Because at that time, I was just upset at myself that I needed so much help and I needed so much guidance, because I thought I was just special and I didn't like that per se. But obviously now I can recognize that that was good. And it also helped because whenever I was getting angry or something, my mom would be like, you need your remedy. And I'd be like, ah, and I would be so upset and exasperated. But hey, that taught me to just accept it and just be a good person and to recognize when I was being over just being obnoxious. And that's always a good thing.
What advice would you offer parents who are seeing changes show up in puberty?
To Rogan or to me? Sorry.
Either one.
Sorry. I would say for parents, just if they had been treating a child, and Dr. Barr had said a couple of key things. First of all, I remember the first thing she had said was, this is going to be kind of like an onion, where we're going to deal with the first major levels of healing. And that will be the outside layer. And we're going to work our way in. And the goal is ultimately to get the best version of Rogan. And ideally that he'll be off of remedies and off living a life. I couldn't fathom that at the time with little Rogan, with all these psychiatric drugs and with everything else. But sure enough, time goes on and it happened. And then we subsided and I didn't even realize that we hadn't been talking to Dr. Barr. I don't know how that's possible when she was such a lifeline. And I literally just, I think everyone knew her name that was around me, and that I just clung to Dr. Barr. So as puberty happened and the regression came, I guess paying attention to that, knowing that it's okay to have a few regressions and a few bumps in the road. And it's just kind of, it clears the field almost. I mean, once we went through that, I don't know that we've really had any need for remedies. I mean, we do talk now, but it's because of me. I need, because Dr. Barr is my lifeline. I can't imagine not having her. So it's, but we don't need to. So paying attention and expecting, I mean, the body goes through some really crazy things during puberty, unexpected things. And I remember thinking at one point, oh, we'll sail through puberty, it won't be a big deal because he's healed, he's fine. But puberty, you just don't know what's going to hit you. So it's really good to pay attention and have an expectation of a few regressions and to know that it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. I'd say just, I think it went a lot quicker than last time, like in the first step when we were healing when I was younger. I think when puberty hit, it was way easier to recover, for one thing. I think it was, we took a bunch of steps back during that period, but then it was much more fast to just recover that time and to build upon that. And I think it was helpful. And yeah, don't get super, super worried. Just continue is what I'd say.
So I know we brought up ADHD. It's one of the things that you've dealt with. It's been, it's one of those layers, right, that you struggle with. So I'm hoping that you can talk about how homeopathy has helped with the ADHD.
It's, Ro, do you want to take this one? Yeah, I'll take it. It has helped so much. I remember it was so hard to just sit still. Like I needed that little rolly thing that you sat on, and it was just crazy. I couldn't write sentences. I always had to complain and do something, listen to something, talk. And it was super distracting to just try to sit down with all these other things happening. But the homeopathy, all the stuff, it's helped so much and I absolutely appreciate it. It was, I can actually like sit down now and not fidget with everything and not talk and whisper to myself, and I can actually get things done. And it was just like that too, is how I feel. It didn't take time, very gradually, and I think I can handle it a lot better now.
Well, I'm going to tell you my recollection is it did take time because you had both the ADHD that would worsen with flares, but you had like an underlying, even when you were doing well, ADHD that we were still working on. And that's especially when you were younger. So you're probably just not as aware of it as much. You had both like flare worsening and just like a baseline steady state ADHD that we had to work through.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And I remember doing, we hid it from other tactics. We had other therapies that we brought in. Mm-hmm. So learning therapies, if you will, I just tried as many things as I could. So in one of the therapies, it was having him memorize numbers, just getting numbers, like a string of numbers. I think we started out with 3. Mm-hmm. And he would do so many, and then he would have to add 4. And the curriculum that we chose with classical conversations, he was doing Memory Master. And so through the process of doing Memory Master, I started to look at the 2 things that we were paying buku bucks for, I guess both things. But one of the therapies, I'm like, well, we're just doing the same thing. But one day he would know it and know it completely. And then the next day he would know nothing. Or even before, and persevering and working through that, he succeeded and gained confidence, but he learned to be patient with himself mm-hmm. and to push through. There was that aspect of it, but then also when he was younger, just taking him outside and having him do his math facts by hopscotch or whatever. That was a gift that we could do because of the homeschooling and what he needed. He needed to be active through that ADHD part.
And there's certain things with homeopathy that, like, you know, we're learning more and more that ADHD is in some ways it's just a different wiring of the brain. And homeopathy is obviously not going to completely change who you are and how you relate to the world. And there's a lot of advantages to ADHD and the way that people with ADHD think about things and view the world. But it can help with the ways that you suffer from it. And that's really what we saw and some of the big regressions. I remember when you were even younger, Rogan, like your mom would tell me about times when you knew how to tie your shoes. So it was like both like the concentration, the ability to tie shoes, and like the gross motor skills too, that would be like come and go. So with the attention mm-hmm. and willingness to do it, and then the skills needed for it. So yeah, I'm really glad to hear that you aren't having those challenges, that you're not having to go outside and do hopscotch to do math anymore.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah. I'll continue.
I'm the worst. I'm sorry. One of his tells was his math. Remember, Dr. Barr? Mm-hmm. That was one question that you even inputted, because one day he would know his math and he'd be sailing along, and the next day he wouldn't, and he would be struggling. And that became a tell that, oh, it's time for either a dosage change or a remedy change.
And I remember that
specifically for a while.
Yes.
It was just, I would know it and then I wouldn't. And it was so frustrating because we would spend all day learning that one thing. Mm-hmm. And then the next day it's like, I can remember this much, but mm-hmm. not the whole thing. And then the next day I would have it again. And I don't know how to describe that. It was just, it was like it was there, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
Rogan, we were temporarily a Classical Conversations family. So I know it's a little bit different of a school experience, but you're still getting that one day and meetups and whatnot. So you're still sort of getting that school experience. I'm curious to know how your fluctuating symptoms impacted your school experience.
Well, for one, it was really hard to pay attention. I know I annoyed a lot of the people there, which is understandable. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't really get to understand how people interact there just because I was reckless and I didn't care. But on the information level, I think I got it after I did a couple years of Memory Master and such, and with all the remedies, of course. But at first, it was really hard to just progress. I remember trying to learn things and trying to pay attention, and it was just almost impossible.
Rogan, how did what you were going through impact your friendships or relationships with your siblings?
I think they recognized that I got a lot of attention because I was different. They definitely saw the worst of me, so they have that to remember. I don't think they per se saw me as, how do I say this? They saw me originally with rages and stuff. That's how they knew me. So instead of seeing good to bad, they saw bad to good. So I think instead of looking at me and like judging me like that, they just saw me as me. They didn't see me as anything else. And then when I progressed, they continued to see me as that new person I was becoming. So they recognized that I got a lot of the attention, and there was hardships in that. I mean, they teased me for it and stuff, but I didn't really care. They're siblings. So I think overall it was just, to me, it was normal. To me, I didn't really recognize anything different about it. Mm-hmm. But since I'm not in their heads, I can't tell you exactly. But to me, at least, it was just life.
It's almost a gift that you got, though. Like you said, it started so young for you that for you to say that they just got to see you getting better and becoming a better version of yourself, that's a weirdly, it's a gift in and of itself.
Yeah.
Have that.
I would definitely agree.
Yeah.
I would say that you did notice, though, it was kind of heartbreaking when you did. You were kind of oblivious to everything, but then one day you woke up and you wanted friends. And you even said you got invited to your brother. His oldest brother is a social butterfly and had tons of friends and was going to everything, and his other siblings too. But he never really cared and never wanted those things. But it wasn't until I think you got invited to tag along to a birthday party that you're about 8 years old and you're like, wait a minute, why don't I have any friends?
Yeah.
And then we had some awkward play dates, but
yeah,
you just didn't, you wanted friends, but you didn't know how to go about getting friends, or that was awkward. I'll let you talk about that.
I was reckless. When I actually got what I would say when I got a conscience is how I like to refer to it. When I actually understood the surroundings and the people around me and how that kind of worked. I mean, I was still reckless, but I had a lot more care and intentionality to do things. And so when I went to school per se, I would just be obnoxious. I would turn it up a notch just so people would see me and laugh. I mean, they didn't really. They were doing it to pity me, but I didn't see it as that. I was just trying to be myself, but way worse because I thought that's what people were. I saw some internet videos and some YouTube videos of just obnoxious people, and I was just like, oh yeah, that's the norm. So I would go to school and I would be a monster. I would just steal the
performance.
Yes, putting on performance. I would.
Talk about the tag. Do you remember?
Tag? Oh yeah. So at school, we were playing tag, and I was invited to play tag, and we were all running away from this little kid, and he finally catches me, and he goes to tag me, and I put him in a chokehold. And I got in trouble for that, of course. And I was so confused. And I was like, what did I do wrong? And my mom was like, well, you put him in a chokehold. And I was like, well, he was trying to touch me. He was hurting me or whatever. I don't know. But she was like, no, he was playing tag. He wasn't doing anything wrong. And I couldn't connect the dots.
Yeah.
I think it was an impulse reaction. I don't think I wanted to. I mean, I've played tag before then. I knew what tag was. I think I just acted out because I felt like it.
Well, what you're describing to me right now is something that we see happen both academically and socially. Like, so PANS can sort of stop you from being able to progress with things. And so you had catching up to do with understanding how people interacted socially. So like, you might have been 8 when that was happening, but you were acting more like a 4-year-old because that was where your brain had gotten stuck. Were needing to get caught up, and you just needed the time to get caught up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of getting caught up with things and like, you know, as you're maturing and everything, at some point you started, Rogan, you started getting more involved in your own care. So your mom obviously did everything when you were really little. At some point you started even talking to me, but I'm curious if you started talking to your mom more before you started talking to me. And if you can share a little bit about that and what made you guys decide to start doing that and how you being more involved impacted your care.
I think when I actually like gained conscience, when I recognized what was going on, I definitely saw how this was helpful. And I saw it as a lot of things, just because of how I viewed it. A lot of psychological battling was going on in my head at the time, but I'd say I saw it mainly as a good thing. I knew it helped me, and I recognized it as good, to accept it as good, to acknowledge that I was doing something wrong in the previous action, or I was messing up and I need this help, was a little frustrating, I'd say, but in the long run, it was super helpful. And I can stand here now, say, yes, it was very helpful and I needed to do it. But at that time it was like, do I have to do this? I can fix it myself. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I would be angry or something, and my mom would say, okay, you got to take your remedy. But it was also just, I recognized the emotions in myself, and I learned to just sometimes like, hey, I'm getting kind of angry right now. I probably need my remedy. Or I wouldn't say anything and I would just take it anyway. But yeah, it's really helpful to just do it yourself and to recognize it as a good thing, in my opinion.
Do it yourself, you mean to participate and share what you're experiencing.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought this up. The way that you felt about it is pretty common. I definitely experienced it myself, but we see this happen for a lot of kids, especially as they're getting to be teenagers, that especially if they've been dealing with stuff for a long time, that they feel like they've been blamed. Like in psychology, it's called the identified patient. And so it's like, I'm the reason that I get all the attention. If things go wrong around me, it's because I'm wrong and something needs to be fixed with me, but then like fighting against it and being like, no, I'm not wrong. There's not something wrong with me, or I don't want to feel like there's something wrong with me. And the reality is there's nothing wrong with it. Somebody who has PANS, it's something that's happening to them. Right.
Yes.
But it can sometimes derail recovery for people when they reach that point that they're tired of being the identified patient or the actual person who needs the most support in the family. So not just like the, like, you know, problematic identified patient where we blame one person for all the problems, but where it feels like that. And then you start to be like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. There's something wrong with you. A lot of kids will push back and like, they won't get help. They won't participate in anything. They'll refuse treatment. So I'm glad that you're bringing it up. Was there anything that helped you make that transition? Cause it was pretty quick for you. And I don't know if it was just homeopathy and your mom forced it into you and that helped with the transition because you respond so quickly, or if there was anything that you went through.
I think I kind of just put on the blinders, I'd say, and I ignored a lot of the thoughts and negativity towards it because I recognized it worked. It made me feel better. It calmed me down. And it made my mom happy. And that was mainly it. It was just, my mom was so nice and she was just trying to help me. And I couldn't deny that. So I would do it because it would make her happy. It would help. There's a lot of beneficial side effects for that. And it was just worth it. So I just put my head down and I was like, yeah, why not?
All right. So as we talked about several times throughout our conversation, you rarely need to dose anymore and you only follow up a few times a year. And that's obviously the goal for people to get to that. Like, and like you said too, Kim, you are following up for yourself, not because I need you to, but because, you know, you did have a regression that happened and you needed my support. And so I know that there's like a security blanket, like I am your security blanket. Can you tell us a little bit how you manage figuring out those rare times that you need a dose and like how you respond, or if you were just by chance to need to reach out? Give us a little bit of insight to what that's like for life now.
Oh, you bet. It's big, like his emotions. And honestly, because it's been so long now that it might be a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And then of course I have a lot of guilt, like, oh, I should have called sooner. If I would have noticed this sooner, we could get in sooner and it could be over sooner. Right. Mm-hmm. But just paying attention, you really gave me the gift of paying attention to Rogan, who he is and what to watch for. And he was articulating this the other day about, you know, what a bad kid he thought he was and how that morphed and how he just is thankful for where he is and who he is. And I think that whole process gave him a wisdom and a maturity that he has that other kids his age don't have. And I think it's because he's gone through what he's gone through. But for me, paying attention and seeing, and sadly, the reality is a couple of them start to stack up and I start to think, oh, life is kind of really tricky or more difficult than I wish it was. And then as I start to assess and analyze, that's when I'm like, oh, we probably need to call. Mm-hmm. So it's not something, yeah, to see. And then I always have implicit trust in you. And that's, you also gave me that too, is I have profound trust issues with the medical community. But in our journey, I just have implicit trust with you because you get Rogan. You got him from the day one and you have a connection with him. And I could just trust you. And because of your connection with him and because of how you understood what he was going through or could listen and pick up on things and the rapport that we had, it just was easy to trust you. And I know that if I suspect a few things are happening and I question it, I can just pick up the phone and I can get an appointment with you. We can touch base and then you can be the voice of reason for me to determine. Because there have been a few times where, no, it just turns out, like, one thing I would always say is, oh, he's klutzy. And you would have to say, I think he's just klutzy. I think that's who he is. We cannot treat that.
That has never changed with any remedy, no matter how well he was doing.
Still, I'm just
always klutzy.
I'm a
but he is, he is coordinated now and it's showing in his extracurricular activities. It's starting to come together. He finally grew into his body, I think.
So that's awesome.
Who would have thought?
Three cheers for me.
Very cool. Kim, I have to take us kind of on a sidebar here because I've heard you say multiple times throughout the whole episode that you should have thought of this or you should have recognized that or you should have thought of it sooner. And I just have to point out the beauty. And I say this because I feel like you and I are probably a lot alike when it comes to healing our kiddos is, man, how beautiful is homeopathy? It's so forgiving. And it allows us to be who we are as a fumbly bumbly going through trauma mamas, and it just still works.
Yes, amen. That is so true. And I love that. I love because we can have, you know, the voices in our head and we can beat ourselves up. And I mean, what this journey has done in just being dogmatic about getting my kid the best life that I want him to have. And I didn't know what that would be starting out with this journey. And I didn't know, I just wasn't ready to quit. I wanted there to be, we were told he couldn't be a public school kid. He couldn't be a public school kid because he would have an adult chaperone with him whenever he was on school grounds. And I didn't, that didn't sit well with me. I didn't like that. That forced us into the homeschooling avenue, which has been nothing but a blessing. But the same with this, all the doctors we went to and all the things that we went through and all the, well, the gaslighting, I think is the term we used earlier. So all of that took place was nothing but a blessing because it led us to hear. And homeopathy is so forgiving and it is so rewarding to know that I think he was able to not have some of the trials and tribulations his buddies have. Mm-hmm. Just through being a normal kid, whatever that means. But the normal things that puberty brings, I think have not been a huge deal for him. I don't know why. And I don't know if that's homeopathy or just what he's gone through, but, and maybe,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he'll have other struggles. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
well, tell us more about what life is like now. What are some of your major wins that you never thought would have been possible for 5-year-old Rogan?
I'll go first. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I can think for myself. There's no I want to say imposter syndrome, but that's kind of dramatic. I am clear minded. I think I have more of an awareness of my surroundings. I'm not nearly as reckless when I choose to be. I can learn more. I can study easier. I don't have nearly as much problems with ADHD. I think I've just come so far from what I was. I there's been a lot of progression and some beautiful things that have happened. I think I'm blessed with this, just this whole path I've gone down. And it's just been such a learning moment. I've gotten so much out of this. I think there's a lot of wisdom and prosperity that comes out of this kind of stuff. I can relate to it more. I can use it to solve problems. And it's all in all, it's awesome.
You've got jobs. You're playing sports, right? You're like this kind, compassionate kid with lots of friends who is like able to help out littler kids and stuff too, right? Like, I mean, toot your own horn here a little bit. Like,
Dr. Barr, ask him about the play.
Tell me about the play.
So my
I'm your mom. I get to embarrass you.
So my mom wanted to do me to do this play. It's called Performing the Classics. It's a homeschool curriculum. And I participated. I joined. And it's Cinderella. Yes, I tried out. We went to the auditions, whatever you want to call it. And I thought I did okay. I mean, I was kind of upset with how I did just because I thought I could do better. And I got the lead role. I'm the prince.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Oh my gosh.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I am royalty. I will always be now. So.
Yes, you are. Kim, what about you? Tell us about life now.
I just have to pinch myself. I mean, the last conversation I had with Dr. Barr, he's thriving, and I'm not going to be emotional. So let's, I'll focus. Little 5-year-old Rogan, who had to have an adult chaperone on public grounds, who I was scared to leave our house. I didn't know what would happen or what cops would do. I mean, when child welfare services are threatened and supposed to get involved, that is profoundly, scary. I just didn't know what kind of future he would have and was just determined for him to be the best version of himself that he could be, but not knowing what that was. And now here he is thriving with a job that I'm getting text messages from his employers about what an exceptional kid he is. We skipped him up a grade. So he is in an older class. I mean, it works out, but he's in an older class and skipped a grade and is one of the deepest thinkers and loves these challenging, meaty subjects that are all collegiate level subjects. He digs into them. He is not scared of a challenge. He has a wisdom and a maturity that gives him just kind of a grounding that I don't see other kids embody. It's just not a common thing that you see. And he can talk to me about anything. The relationship that he and I have, sky's the limit as far as whatever he sets his mind to and whatever he is determined to accomplish, he is going to. And he's not going to accomplish just the base ground. He can laugh at himself and he can fail along the way, all while he's gaining ground and becoming a success in the thing that he's determined to do. So yeah, I'm
just tiny
I'm thankful.
Things. Tiny,
yeah,
tiny
just tiny things.
Rogan, I hope you understand the enormity of you being here with us today, because this is how we change things, is we teach people and we teach people through our experiences. And the fact that you're willing to show up and be vulnerable and talk about a really, really hard thing that you went through is such a big deal, because there's so many young kids suffering. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there right now. I think you're so strong and so brave. And it's just really there are so many moms in this community that are trying to understand what's going on with their kiddos, trying to understand healing. And they're also trying to help their kids understand it. But oftentimes it takes hearing it from someone their own age. So thank you so much for being here with us. It's a really big thing that you're doing for the community. Now, along those lines, what advice would you give kids, especially younger teenage boys, about homeopathy and getting help for the challenges similar to what you have experienced?
Well, first I want to say thank you so much. That was so nice to hear. And to answer the question, I'd say don't compare yourself to others. Don't do that in a way that it would seem just unable to strive for and actually get. It's okay to recognize the good things in a person, and strive to have those, but don't compare yourself to somebody you just cannot be. You are not different to the extent that you think you are, and these remedies are not here to hurt you. A lot of people on this earth need help, they need guidance, and they just don't accept it, because help is what brings you through life. Help is what helps you learn, and people need help, and it's good that you're different. It's okay to be different, and it's okay to be unique. It's a beautiful thing, and everybody has their own set of problems. Please recognize that you are not what you think you are. You are beautiful, and you have a reason to be here. You have a purpose. You serve a purpose. And if you walk out of this, when you walk out of this, with the recognition that you have about your past, with all these things leading up, if you hold on to that and heal it, it's beautiful, because you can walk out of this darkness and just your life just lights up. You see all these things, you see all these problems you can relate to and help others. And you can look back into the past and see how far you've come. And it's just a magnificent ordeal just to see you. And you didn't change. You didn't change into a person entirely different from yourself. You simply became you. And I think that's beautiful.
You know, Rogan, I always say that I firmly believe that Pan's kids who are able to heal, especially with homeopathy, are going to change the world. And what you just said really speaks to that. And the ways that going through something like this, some challenge, and getting the help that you need for it without looking at yourself as broken, but just somebody who needs some support. And then the ways it can change the way you relate to the world and the way that you can see things, and the opportunities it gives to you. Maybe I'm right. Maybe you're going to change the world. Maybe all these Pan's kids are going to change the world. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Kim, what advice would you offer parents considering using homeopathy?
Oh man, don't delay. And Rogan responded really, really fast, but that wasn't my husband's experience. And I would say, trust your homeopathist. Find somebody you can relate with, who gets it, and then throw everything you have at it, because what's on the other side is worth it.
Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to share your experience, to come and share with a community that you didn't even realize was your community for most of your journey. It just speaks volumes to the fact that in spite of that, you are still willing to show up and share your experience. And, you know, there's lots of lives that are going to be touched. That I know people who are happy to hear from people on the other end who've been through a whole lot of things, ups and downs along the way, and are just still just thriving and doing so well. I'm so glad that you guys were willing to come and share your story. And I hope that someday, Kim, that you won't need me as a whoopee anymore. And I also hope that you guys will still stay in touch, because I can't wait to see what you do in this world, Rogan. It's seriously one of my favorite times when I see your name pop up on my schedule, because I'm like crossing my fingers. Hopefully we're just checking in and getting to like a big celebration time and saying how great things are going. And that's almost always what it is. So thank you both so much for your willingness to be here and for sharing.
Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
We're just so eager to thank you. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This was such an awesome inspiration, and just to join here and talk about this. I appreciate everything you brought up. I feel like we answered some great questions. This whole interaction has been amazing.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for Pans and Pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.